Could part of the reason kids aren't learning be the way we are trying to teach them? We will talk with Marion Brady about constructing knowledge. Our activist of the week takes on corporate education. Matt Damon's mom will speak up. We will tell you what's trending in education news and take a moment of zen. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins. It's time to take a look at the top trending news stories in education. Number one.
Race matters, and it seems it's as simple as black and white. A new study from Adam Wright, Teachers' Perceptions of Students' Disruptive Behavior, the Effect of Racial Congruence, and Consequences for School Suspension. Of course, another long, incredibly crazy academic title. Let's get to the meat of this, though.
Yeah, what's the meat?
Black children do better with black teachers.
Right. And this was the result of a very sophisticated study.
An extremely complex longitudinal study from years and years of data on student reports, teacher reports of behaviors, okay? A side finding on this is that people say, you know, what about white students? White students do well with all kinds of teachers,
mm-hmm.
African-American, Asian-American, even, you know, British-American.
Right. So this doesn't happen for other racial groups. Just for the African-American kids, they do better with African-American teachers.
So takeaway here is the efforts to continue to add more African-American teachers to the public schools should be continued and, in fact, I would say intensive. Yeah.
Yeah. Amen to that.
Number two.
Trump, Clinton, Sanders, Rubio, Cruz, presidential politics, education. Jed, what is their platforms? Well, let me give you one platform here. End of Common Core, end of high stakes testing, teaching evolution, teaching sex education, making sure that corporate education does not get into public education. Who are we talking about?
It's Bernie?
It sounds like Bernie, doesn't it?
It does.
And most people would take that as Bernie. Actually, that's none of the above. That's Dr. Jill Stein's platform, the Green Party candidate for president of the United States.
All right, let's hear it for the Green Party.
Now, what are her chances in winning? Zero chances of hell freezing over, you name all those cliches.
Yeah, right.
However, it is interesting when you look at the education platform of Jill Stein. I can't imagine anything more progressive and more in line with what's best for kids. I wonder what Matt Damon's mom thinks about Dr. Jill Stein.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
I love Jill Stein. She's from Massachusetts, you know.
Yes, I know.
She doesn't live too far from here. She's been running on the Green Party ticket for a long time, and I admire her very much for her steadfastness with trying to get issues out there through the Green Party voice. I wish it was a louder voice. I wish she could be part of the debate so that people who watch debates on television would be hearing her views on everything. But on education, she's certainly been terrific as far as I know what she said, but certainly, you know, ending privatization and ending high-stakes testing and free college education and free education pre-K through college and understanding that charters are siphoning off resources from public schools. These are wonderful dimensions to a platform that I wish we would hear from the two-party candidates who are so afraid to go anywhere near education, and they'll only talk about the safe issues like student loans or, you know, other universal pre-K, which everybody agrees on, but they won't go any further than that. I think they're really afraid to. Now, finally, Hillary Clinton is saying, I support public education. But what does she mean by that? Because a lot of people will insist that charter schools are public. They're not. They're just staying away from what I think are these critical issues that have to do with the nature of education in this country and most likely the stability and future of our democracy. But Jill Stein, insofar as she's expressed it, is on the same page with us, although Jill could use a good education advisor, too,
okay.
And so could everybody else, because they need to be saying much more than what they're saying, and they need somebody with them, I think, who is an educator who would help them understand what quality education looks like and help them be able to say more about issues of standards, Common Core, you know, what should be happening in classrooms, what should be happening in teacher preparation.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
He has been both a teacher and an administrator in his over 40-year career. He's featured regularly in the Washington Post. He writes textbooks, and they're available for free on the internet. Here to talk to us about how to teach kids, Marion Brady. Welcome to Busted Pencils.
Well, thank you very much.
What I understand when I look at everything you've written is a total disappointment with the fact that we just fail to engage students, to get them engaged, to get them thinking, to get them moving. And you've simply laid out there that the schooling we have does not produce engaged students. Why is that?
I think probably one thing that sums it up is Whitehead's statement about the second-handedness of the learned world is the secret of its mediocrity. We're basically engaged in dealing with second-hand knowledge, with the assumption that what needs to be known is known, and it's wrapped up in the core curriculum. And it's just a matter of transferring the information, or I guess Bill Gates calls it delivering the information, and then checking to see if it's been delivered. That sort of, for me, that misses the task.
When you say core curriculum, you're not really necessarily talking about the Common Core particularly, but you're really talking about what I might say is the standard American school curriculum, which is a discipline-based, subject-based curriculum. Is that more what you're saying with the core curriculum?
That's right. The whole approach to knowledge, the assumption that you can slice it up into pieces and examine the pieces without regard for the whole of which those pieces are parts, or without regard for how they interact and interrelate and work together systemically, it's just appalling to me that we can be in the knowledge business and yet disregard the fundamental nature of knowledge, which has to be dealt with holistically.
And to make it even trickier, this is an old problem, right? I mean, in one of your pieces, you mentioned that in 1892, the National Association of Educators put out a report which said, we've got to standardize the curriculum, right? So this has been going on for a long time.
Yes, it has been. And thoughtful people have been criticizing it from the beginning. At the same time that the Committee of Ten met and sort of set us on this course of this curriculum that we're on, there were those nationally and internationally known scholars that said, this is not the way to go. And I've been collecting, for years I've collected quotes, and I've got about 36 quotes that all say in very simple language that you can't make sense of reality by cutting it up into little pieces and examining the pieces without studying how they fit together. I tried to figure out why this is, and I suppose it's because of the way the curriculum is handled. Everybody's a specialist, and when you try to talk about the whole, that doesn't ring a bell with them. They're not prepared to think of that of something beyond their specializations, or that their specializations are part of a larger body of knowledge that has to be looked at holistically.
Yeah, so I think in one of your writings you say that the curriculum is seen as a catechism, a list of discrete facts or clumps of information, basically removing the students from the practice in which they originated. How do we bring humanity back then to the curriculum?
Years ago, I was teaching at Florida State University, and there was an experimental school on campus, and that's when I began moving in the direction that I'm in now. And I decided then that the school itself was a representative sampling of reality, that it included everything on a small scale that exists on the macro scale. And so I started asking kids to try to look analytically at their immediate experience. And by immediate, I meant this classroom, right now, right here, right now. And These were like 8th graders, 7th, 8th, 9th graders, and I would say, I'd put them in small groups, and I'd say, okay, here's the task. I want you to start writing down facts that are true just inside these walls at this very moment. Well, they'd begin it, and after 15 or 20 minutes, somebody would say, this is endless. There are thousands. There are millions. In fact, it's impossible just to list the facts that we could write down about what's true in this room. And, of course, if it was a history class, I would say, all right, if you can't figure out how to organize the information in this room, what kind of a task is it for the historian, history, not dealing with a room but a continent, and not dealing with an immediate moment in time, but with great spans of time? And that would begin dialogue that just set me back at the at how thoughtful and how analytical these kids were capable of being.
Which they're not allowed to be normally, right?
Right. Right.
The expectation and what you're seeing there and saying about kids, we underestimate their ability. This is Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk Radio, and we are talking to author, educator, extraordinary person who just continues to pound down the door to knock the disciplines away, Marion Brady. But Marion, so thinking about that, though, the disciplines being part of the problem, and the fact that the kids are not the problem, the kids are quite capable and teachers are quite capable. One of the things that you have done, and people can go to marionbrady.com and download, you put your stuff out there for free, courses of study that look at taking apart this kind of discipline knowledge, the core content knowledge, as you talk about, or the core subjects, and break it apart. Have teachers downloaded and followed up with you and said, thank you, this really worked, and or come back and said, you know what, I don't get it, I still don't understand it, I've downloaded it?
My brother and I have worked on this material together, going back with a project that we did for Prentice Hall back in the 70s. One of my old editors approached me about doing this. They said, your stuff is too good to waste. Do something. And so that's when we decided we would just go back and salvage stuff that we'd done in various projects, put them together, and put them online. And the downloading has been steady and high, and I would guess, and I think this is probably conservative, that materials from our website have been downloaded, I'd say at least 50 or 60,000 times. So somebody, I don't know, I can't prove that they're using it, I don't know that they are.
Right.
Once in a while I get a little feedback and say, well, but the most frequent feedback comes from people saying, I really like your stuff, but I teach at the fourth grade level. Mm-hmm. What do you have for that? And I say, well, I've never taught at the fourth grade level. I don't know. But I said, I'm told that it's possible to stick with the sort of the basic ideas and work with materials that are so concrete and specific that the kids can make sense of it.
It's being downloaded 50, 60,000 times. You're saying this. We know students are unengaged. Let's come back and say, okay, why isn't this happening? And I've seen you've been very critical of the test and punish reform movement. I mean, is there a problem that we have with people in power that don't want this system in place?
I never thought that people paid that much attention.
I'm sorry, I gave humanity too much credit.
Of course, there's the fact that all of us, that everybody, almost everybody in the profession has been trained, as I said, as a specialist, and that some of the things that I would like to push are probably threatening. But as far as but if they realize how much richer, how much more exciting what we're doing could be if they just begin to break down some of the barriers and begin to stop thinking about their discipline and start thinking about the real world and the richest, it's the richest textbooks there is. All the disciplines, of course, are simply attempts to make sense of some aspect of reality, of language or topography or of meteor, of the weather or whatever. And there it is, the real thing, all around us, surrounding us. What I did was begin by asking kids, how can we make sense of this? And I wasn't playing games with them. How are we making sense of it? And out of that came this realization on my part, although it took me years to realize it, that what they were doing was basically breaking it down into, they were saying, to make sense of things, we have this category system of who, what, when, where, why. We locate things in time. We locate them in space. We identify the participating actors or objects, and then we read those together to make sense. And it's basically the elements of drama, the elements of stories, the elements of communication. And kids led me with this. When we got into these categories, they began to talk about the subcategories and the sub-subcategories and the sub-sub-subcategories. And what they were really doing, and I eventually realized it, was that they were sort of laying out on paper their model of reality, how they went about organizing reality. And that's, as I said, it took me years to realize that what they were talking about was just ordinary, daily, common sense. Got to this by realizing that the disciplines are secondary organizers of knowledge, mm-hmm. that we have a built-in, probably, I assume, hardwired approach to organizing knowledge, that the grasp of that major organizer is like having a grasp of the trunk of the tree. If you see the trunk of the tree as our first-level organizers, and then the disciplines as secondary organizers, and, of course, as the disciplines are elaborated with the passage of time out into the twigs and the leaves and so forth, it creates a unity of knowledge, of an understanding that everything is part of everything. And by recognizing that, what opens up is this whole richness of the discovery of relationships that we're blinded to now because we've built these walls between the disciplines.
So in a nutshell, Marion, what I hear you say is that you're advocating for a pedagogy, a way of teaching that truly honors the way human beings experience reality.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's so rich. I was jaded by the time I began to discover this. I remember standing out in a hallway with another teacher during a class change in a high school that I was teaching in Ohio, and I said, you know, there has to be more to it than this. This just is, I send them home to read, and they come back, and then we talk about what they read, and I tell them in my own words what they read. I said, this is not it. And that's when I began to lean on the kids and to begin to live with silences by asking them really difficult questions and just letting them stew about it and argue about it.
The simplicity in one way of saying, why don't we try listening to children and have them explain how they are experiencing reality? I think that's some great advice for teachers out there.
Yes. Well, thank you. I really appreciate your interest. And I can't tell you how I get kind of frantic sometimes, given my age. I want to see something happen before I'm still around to see it. And I want us to see us stop grinding along on this same old pathway and really take off.
Well, we're going to make that happen. So yeah. Thank you, Marion.
I want to encourage people to go to your website.
Yeah, marionbrady.com.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
She's a professor of teacher education at Towson University and the author of the blog Education Alchemy. Welcome to the show, our activist and blogger of the week, Morna McDermott. Where does that title come from?
I have a long-standing interest in alchemy. I mean, it would take a whole radio show, and I don't want to bore your listeners with it, but I have a fascination with alchemy. Essentially, it's the symbolism of turning a base metal into gold, but it was really a spiritual metaphor or parable as that really talked about the transformation of oneself to a higher purpose, basically. And it's going through trials and tribulations and difficulties in order to come out on the other end with a higher purpose or a better, as a better human being. So the way I see it is, you know, we are fighting these battles in education. We are constantly at odds with organizations and individuals and ideals that want to destroy our democratic principles and destroy childhood. And we're going through these very, very challenging phases. And the goal is to move through those to the other end and achieve something greater and better than what we started at.
What qualifies you to write this blog? Give us a little background.
I've been a teacher for 25 years. I got my PhD in research and evaluation from University of Virginia in 2001. So I have an education background and I have a scholarship background. I know how to do research. And I feel very strongly that in my blog, at least, if something is an opinion, I'll tell you it's an opinion. But if I tell you something, you know, like recently I just talked about the Business Roundtable and its influence on the Every Student Succeeds Act, you know, the reauthorization of ESSA. If I make that claim, I better be able to back it up five ways to Sunday with primary documents. And if I can't, I'm not going to tell you something as though if it's not. That's important because there are a lot of blogs out there that are opinion, that make claims that aren't backed up, and it discredits a lot of the movement. When you research the Common Core, when I researched UNESCO, because I was looking at UNESCO and the relationship to Common Core, there's a lot of crazy stuff out there about UNESCO that people are saying. I'm like, I took hours of trolling through BS before I could possibly get to something that was a primary document from UNESCO itself. But I had to troll through all kinds of crazy claims.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem with blogging as an academic, is people don't take blogging seriously. But it is a great way for me to get the primary research out there, and then I turn that into published scholarship in academia as well.
To call it a blog actually seems, you know, maybe short-sighted, because this looks more like academic research. And so
I think I came to blogging as an academic. So like Stephen Krashen, God bless him, because I love him to pieces and he's brilliant. Oh, he tells me they're too long, Warner. They're too long. I'm like, I know, Stephen. The problem is I don't want to say something if I can't document it, if I can't give you evidence.
The longer, well-documented blogs like yours, and I compare, you know, Paul Thomas does a really good job too of documentation. There's a credibility that you lend in that blog, and so, you know, that's a really important part. What do you think is your most controversial blog?
Oh, God. You should have told me that you were going to ask me that before you recorded this. UNESCO. Because I did a three-part study on UNESCO and the origins of Common Core going all the way back to 1984.
UNESCO, just elaborate on that acronym.
UNESCO is the education and communications arm of the UN.
Okay.
It was formed in the late 40s, early 50s, following World War II, as a way to bring nations together using communication and education to build world peace. Noble idea, not a bad, you know, as far as I'm concerned, on the face of it, was a pretty good organization. The problem is, over time, especially in the 80s, it began to get hijacked by corporate interests, notably ALEC, you know, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and then the information and education technology industry. Anyway, so the reason I think that's the most controversial is because bashing UNESCO tends to be the purview of the far right, which is why I was saying I had to troll through piles and piles of crazy information before I could get the facts. I think it's controversial because those of us who might consider ourselves left or progressive or radical liberal see something like UNESCO and think of it as being a positive thing. And it's usually bashed by the far right for being communist-leaning and socialist-leaning. And the fact of the matter is, it isn't. It's the exact opposite. It's become an arm of the Business Roundtable. It's become an arm of global corporations. It's doing the bidding of the neoliberal agenda. I think it was the most controversial because on the face of it, it sounds like it's coming from the far right when it's back coming from the far left.
And this is what I think the highlight of the Education Alchemy blog, and I would recommend the listener check out the Education Alchemy blog and Morna McDermott's writing, because she is not afraid to put out there the facts, whether they supposedly be left or right. It's not the point. The point is to put out the facts, tell us the truth about what's happening in education, and as you said, get to that gold other side. Thank you, Morna McDermott, for being on Busted Pencils. And Jed, what do we say?
Keep busting those pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio.
Fully Leaded Education Talk with Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Jed Hopkins.
We'll leave you now with our weekly tribute to Howard Zinn with a moment of Zinn.
The memory of oppressed people is one thing that cannot be taken away. And for such people, with such memories, revolt is always an inch below the surface.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, log on to BustedPencils.com to keep up with trending news, hear parts of the show, and nominate an activist of the week. For Jed Hopkins, I'm Tim Slecker, and thanks for Busting Pencils.